We'll call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. A quorum is present, and the first order of business would be to approve the minutes from the March 24th meeting. Representative Beard, have you had a chance to peruse the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chairman. They look in order to me. I'll be happy to move them.
Thank you. I'm sorry, that was the March 26th minutes, I'm sure. I'm sure you were aware of that, Representative.
Yeah, the ones I looked at.
Yep.
Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members, before we begin, it's my intention today. We had House File 436 on the agenda. It's not my intention to take that bill up today. What I would like to do, what I hope we can do, is wrap up the finance bill and then take up House File 436 tomorrow. We're scheduled to meet at 2:15 in room 5 tomorrow to take up that bill. So with that, members, we can take up where we left off on Monday, which is considering amendments to House File 1392 as amended. First amendment would be the H1392A16 amendment that Representative Gardner and members. I should say about this that we, as you recall, had a series of hope, and I think the votes at the time suggest non-controversial low-income cold weather bills. It was our intention to roll those into the finance bill so that we wouldn't be taking up great amounts of time on the House floor dealing with those bills one by one. And unfortunately, somehow, Representative Gardner's bill, which was one of those, was overlooked. It is a bill that we have heard and that passed, I believe, unanimously out of committee. And with that, Representative Gardner, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A16 amendment.
Is there any discussion to that amendment, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, the H1392A16 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Next on the agenda, the H1392A4 amendment. I believe, Representative Magnus, that's your amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer the A4 amendment for consideration from the committee. Mr. Chairman, we're creating the Rural Wind Energy Development Revolving Fund, and the key point is that this is a revolving fund. And what my amendment does, Mr. Chairman, I'm worried about situations we've had in the past since it is a revolving fund and people would be lined up to access some of the loan money. I'm worried with the existing language in the bill. I would like to see it moved up. I've talked to the Department of Commerce about this. My amendment says repayment within 30 days, after the project begins commercial operations. In other words, the project is up and running. Or in the case that the project is not going, 2 years from the date the loan is issued. And I've added the 2 years From the loan issue date, Mr. Chairman, to prevent what I'm concerned about here, that projects get some loans and they sit there and the money's not being revolved in the program and new entities can't come in then because the money's tied up for whatever reason happens or goes on. So that's my amendment.
Discussion to the amendment, Representative Knuth, and members, I should point out this is a provision in the language that is House File 1214, which was Representative Knuth's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Magnus. This is actually language we and the stakeholders in this bill agreed to, and it makes a lot of sense in terms of making sure it's, you know, we have money in the revolving loan fund, that it's not a giveaway for projects that don't come off the ground. So this is some language that we had agreed to. It was actually left out when it was drafted in the omnibus bill. So thank you, Representative Magnus, for bringing it forward, and I do support this amendment.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty, and to Representative Magnus or Representative Knuth. As I looked at the language, this is actually one thing that I thought maybe should be clarified, because it states on line 343.4, it says the loans must be structured for repayment within 6 months. As I read that, you could interpret that as full repayment. And I'm wondering if you're saying in this language that the loans must be structured for repayment that should begin within that time. Are you saying that's when your repayment's supposed to begin, or are the loans supposed to be fully repaid? So I just think we need to clarify that in this language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd actually look to Mr. Eliff to clarify that. I'm not sure how the language of the law works.
Well, perhaps we should ask the author of the amendment what his intent is, Representative Magnus.
That's why I'm deferring to Representative Knuth. I don't know how the loan is, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how the loan agreement is set up, whether they make payments on it or whatever. Maybe Mr. Eloff can help with that. I don't know how the loan is set up, whether it's a one-time payment paid all back right away or it's over time or however it goes.
Mm-hmm. Could you clarify that for us, Mr. Eloff? As the language exists right now, what would be the consequence?
I guess I would interpret it as it exists right now, that the loan would have to be fully repaid. If we want to, I think if we want to clarify it, if this is the concept that people are agreed on, should say repayment to begin within 30 days.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
But then we don't know when repayment has to end. I mean, part of it is that we're leaving it up to the Commissioner of Commerce to figure out exactly how this program is going to work.
Mr. Chairman. We have Mr. Bull.
And there's the Department of Commerce.
Mr. Bull.
Mr. Chair, the language that we've worked out with the...
Mr. Bull, would you please identify yourself?
Yes. I'm Mike Bull. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Renewable Energy.
Not that we don't all know who you are.
But the tape may not. At the Department of Commerce. The what we're proposing is that the loans would be fully repayable, would be due within 30 days of commercial operations. At some point in the period where the power purchase agreement is signed and commercial operations, the money starts to flow for these projects and that these loans can be repaid. However, many of these projects may never come to commercial operations, so we had to make account for that possibility, and what we ended up with is that the loan should be fully repaid within 2 years of the date of the loan, so whichever is earliest. So it gives an additional couple of years to pay back the loan if they don't come to commercial operation.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bolt. And I know some of these details got to be worked out, but what happens if somebody gets the money borrowed out and then doesn't get a project going, and then where would their money be to pay it back? I mean, I like the spirit of the intent of this. I'm just trying to think. I mean, I think the idea is to help a project, two projects along, and then get to commercial financing at some point when things are looking pretty viable, and at the PPA signing, that would be a logical step. But what happens if somebody borrows $250,000 and the project never happens, and maybe they don't have the assets or cash savings to pay it back? Is that conceivable, or am I, is that not a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, the size of the couple things. One is that the size of these loans are smaller than that. We're looking at under $100,000, mostly in the order between 50 and 80 for these kinds of interconnection studies, and that we wanted to make sure that these loans were available for projects, they understood the risk that they were undertaking. So and that they took them seriously, that these weren't grants, and wanted to make sure, because it's a revolving loan, we needed to make sure the loans are repaid to refill the loan account so that other folks can get loans as well. So we struggled with the idea of partial forgiveness, but I talked to a few developers, small developers, who said two things. One, make sure we've done the feasibility study for a project first, which is a smaller set of interconnection studies at the beginning of the project to make sure the project's feasible. And make sure we have skin in the game. Make sure we understand that these loans need to be repaid, and that not turn them into grants. Otherwise, they're going to be there'll be too much of a call for these kinds of financial assistance for projects that aren't real, that may not have an ability to come to fruition.
So, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Westrom, let me interrupt you for a moment. I think Representative Magnus has another amendment, which I think we should take up next,
okay.
which moves responsibility for these loans from the Center for Rural Development to the Department of Commerce. And I think the rationale for that was a question of who has the experience and dealing in these matters, and if that amendment was adopted, then we would know who to come to and say, what were you thinking when you made that loan, Mr. Bull?
We're going to take that up first, Mr. Chair. That's fine.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and quickly, Mr. Bull, to this point that we're on. My concern is, and maybe I'm missing something here, but upon 30 days of your project starting, someone's supposed to be able to come up with $75,000 or $80,000 to repay. I mean, if they put up one wind turbine or three wind turbines, is that first check going to be in the amount of $75,000 so they can repay it? Help me understand this. I appreciate that.
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Welty, my understanding is that when the power purchase agreement is signed, there's the debt financing is arranged, the equity financing arranged. There's money flowing. There's money available for these kinds of to pay back a loan of this size. I don't think that's what I've talked to. When I talk to the small developers that are working on these projects, that wouldn't be a problem.
Representative Westrom, did you want to wait until we do take up the Magnus Amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I will just speak quickly, because the come to this point that Mr. Bull was talking about, Mr. Bull, once we borrow the money for the MISO study or the interconnect study, until that study comes back, we don't know for sure. The developers, the project owners don't know for sure that that's a location they can make, and if that comes back and says no, this transmission line is full, they may have to look for another location, which could mean their project fails or terminates. And I'm just asking this question, just as arising as we're talking here. I'm fine with the intent here. Is that an issue, or is that just a risk that they're going to have to take?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, it is an issue, and it's essentially a risk. I think that we have to manage which is one of the reasons you ask. I think we're proposing to ask for the feasibility studies up front, which is gives you a rough cut whether or not this is going to work at that location, the project at that will work at that location, and under what conditions, you know, what are the system upgrades that are required, etc. The so we do have some upfront information to sort of manage that risk, whether or not this is a loan that they want to go for, and take on that potential burden if they never come to commercial operation. So it's the flip side is whether or not we wanted to turn this into from a loan program to a grant program, and I think at this point we wouldn't be recommending that to.
Representative Magnus, Mr. Bull, one thing that I just asked Mr. Eloff to see if he could come up with some language that would give us a little wiggle room here.
Mm-hmm.
I think Representative Wester makes a good point. I think Representative Magnus is concerned as well, and undoubtedly so is the author of the bill. If we would you find it acceptable to put some language in here that allowed some discretion to the commissioner for extraordinary circumstances?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, and if we could maybe give some guidance around how we could use that discretion, that would be good. And what circumstances we would be discreet. Mr. Chair, also, if we could call on maybe that the money that you're putting aside for us for hydrogen, then we'd Katie bar the door, we could do all the
Mr. Different Chairman? Discussion, Mr. Paul.
Mr. Chairman, if I'd have a question for Mr. Paul, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Westrom is concerned, I think, about the 30 days, and maybe it's wiser to put it out to 60 or 90 days, and maybe 30 days is too much of a squeeze. And Representative Knuth, I know this is your bill. I'd ask your thoughts on it, too, if we could maybe discuss that a second.
Yes, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this 30 days, we had some negotiation on it. 6 months. Let me back up. The idea behind this is not to do grants and take out up to $100,000 worth of risk for rural wind developers. It's to make sure these projects have a chance of getting off the ground at all. And to not have that repayment, the two-year repayment, I think that is an important part of it. It's saying, you know, we're not just going to dole out money to have these projects, maybe try them and see if they work. It's to say this is a really hard time for people to get the money they need to make these projects move forward. Therefore, we're going to try to help out in this area and make sure with money coming back in that we can continue doing this process without having to appropriate money continually to fund this program. In terms of the 6 months is again on this same issue. It's trying to have to balance the interest of having money in the revolving loan fund with having people have a realistic time frame for repaying the loan. The 30 days is what we'd come to, and I'm not they actually proposed 15 at some point, so we did move a little that way. And I'm comfortable with the 30 days. I'm not sure we need to extend it to 60 or 90. I'd like to keep the language as it is. And you know, if we hear that really is going to be an issue, and we've already heard the money starts flowing prior to that time, then maybe we can relook at it, but this time I'd like to keep it at 30.
Mr. Eloff has suggested some language that would not affect the 30-day requirement directly, but I think because of the way we would want that to read, actually what we should do is take up the A15 amendment first, if members have no objection to that. Representative Magnus, if you would be willing to temporarily withdraw the A4 in favor of the A15.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll certainly be willing to do that.
Representative Magnus then moves the A1392 A15 amendment. Representative Magnus, would you want to address that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate you taking this amendment up, Mr. Chairman, because it is dealing with just the sort of thing we're talking about. And my concern is that we have the expertise needed to work with this funding here. We're talking about $1 million the first year and $1 million for the second year. And that's on page 5, lines 5.8, 5.9, and 10. This is currently going to the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And Mr. Chairman, I really feel strongly it should go to the Commissioner of Commerce for the development of the Rural Wind Energy Program. And going to page 43, we would also delete the language Center for Rural Policy and Development and insert Commissioner of Commerce. One of the other bills, Mr. Chairman, we've talked about is setting up an entity in funding some of that with the funding we have with the Department of Commerce. And, Mr. Chairman, I really think that's the place we need to go. We need to have a central location here, somebody in administration that can coordinate this with all the other agencies and everyone else. And that's why I'm supporting the commissioner doing this.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would strongly oppose this amendment for a few reasons. First is this is one of the, this is a rural wind development, and there's actually two parts: the revolving loan fund, which is what we just talked about. This is developing a rural wind development kind of center. We're not quite sure what's going to be developed because we don't want to be prescriptive in that manner. That's one of the exciting parts of this program. What Representative Magnus is proposing is giving that grant-making authority to the Department of Commerce instead of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And this is a conversation we've had for a pretty lengthy time, talking about where in the state should be administering this grant. And the Center for Rural Policy and Development was actually one of the places suggested by Assistant Commissioner Bull and agreed to by all of the parties. And in terms of the argument that we would like to have a central place to administer it and those sorts of things, I agree we want a central place where people can go for help. I'm not sure if that's where we want the revolving loan fund decisions to be made at the same time, because if you're giving someone some help and you're also giving them a loan for their program, you've got some problems in there in terms of you're going to be wanting to give a loan to a program that you've seen with this help or that help. It's having these developers making the case to a different entity that they their project is worthwhile, I think, is something that strengthens the program. And so I would strongly oppose this amendment and keep the agreed language that the Department of Commerce has also been involved in working toward.
Mr. Ball?
Mr. Chair, I probably should have left while I had the chance. As Representative Knuth points out that if members may remember that the initial proposal was that the grant, this grant making would have gone to the university at IRE, the Institute for Renewable Energy and Environment. We didn't think that that was an appropriate place. They do great work, but this isn't the kind of thing that they do. And I suggested either the Department of Commerce, AURI, or the Center for Rural Policy and Development, and that's where we've settled. I appreciate Representative Magnus's confidence in our abilities, and you know there may be some opportunity for coordination or consultation between the department and the center as this goes forward. Which you may or may not want to recognize.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, on page 44. I would point out what this entity that is administering this program basically, or managing it, is supposed to do, providing legal, engineering and financial service, targeting communities, creating market opportunities for utilities to meet the RES goals, the obligations that that we've put on earlier here in the year, negotiating power purchase agreements, facilitating transmission interconnection, and so on. And Mr. Chairman, I would envision that this is exactly what the Department of Commerce is supposed to be doing. And if not, they ought to be doing it, I would suggest. And if my opinion, Mr. Chairman, is if the department is doing this already, why are we paying someone else that probably doesn't have the expertise? I'm not critical of the Center for Policy and Development. I think a lot of them, and they do good work. But to my knowledge, this is not the expertise that they have. And maybe they want to hire Mr. Bull away from the Department of Commerce. I'm not sure. But the department should have that expertise, and that's what they should be doing. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, I've offered the amendment. I don't want to see us duplicating this and then have the center have to come back and report to the Department of Commerce and then them to the other agencies and back to us. So, and Mr. Chairman, I don't see a report to the legislature here with this either. And that's another concern I have with this provision. I didn't put it in there because I would assume the department then would report back to us. I think if we leave it with the center members, that at the very least we need to have language in here that makes a report requirement back here, because the way it is now, we'd have $2 million out the door before we know what, and no report back of what happened.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Magnus. You brought up a couple of points. One is, I didn't make the point as clear as I could. This is actually not the Center for Rural Policy and Development creating this entity. It's administering the grant. So some of the points about the revolving loan fund and the grant are not as strong, but you bring up an important point that I thing needs to be pointed out in terms of this program. You know, the Center for Rural Policy and Development is not in St. Paul. It's out working with people who do this. It's staffed by people who do this. I'm not sure who who do rural wind development, but who are living in rural Minnesota. And I think that's something I also think is a strong argument for having it there, is because it's not the people in St. Paul prescribing how, well, we're already doing that quite a bit right now, but a way for the rural entities to be figuring out what the strongest grantee is for this. In terms of the report to the legislature, I think that is a good idea. I think it would be covered under the best practices regarding grant management functions in terms of reporting back and getting the information. I think it would be public information, and we could find it. But in terms of this speaking to this specific amendment that we have before us, I think this is something that's agreed upon by all sides. The Department of Commerce has stated is comfortable with it, and I think it's a very good place for this. It's not the grantee, it's the grant-making body.
Representative Osmond?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Magnus, I think you made some valid points with your concerns. I'm wondering if, after hearing the department as well as President Knuth's concerns, if we maybe would you consider if we, instead of putting Department of Commerce in place of the Center for Rural Policy and Development, if we say that after the words Center for Rural Policy and Development in consultation with the Department of Commerce shall make a grant, so that we do have that coordination between what's happening in this particular program and what is in, at least they have the direction from the legislature, there should be a consultation on how this impacts people on a statewide basis. I'm looking for peace in the valley. So.
Well, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I thought there was peace in the valley in terms of the department and the other rural wind developers and various groups involved with this in terms of this particular choice. We did compromise. We did change it from the first option, and I'm not sure how you. I mean, I guess Representative Osmond, if you have an example of where a grant-making body is consulting with another body in terms of deciding who gets the grant, maybe. You know, I'm not in a grant-making position currently, but I would still oppose the amendment. I think this is a good place for this authority to be, and I would still oppose that amendment.
Well, sure.
Representative Osmond.
Looks like that would not be peace in the valley. But there are examples as to where we have one agency and or department that's responsible, but we do give directions for them to coordinate and to consult with others just to make sure that everybody's interest is kind of looked out after.
It's somewhat analogous to the situation we have with the Department of Administration, which they review all of the contracts that the state issues, although they're not necessarily involved in the negotiation of the contracts to begin with. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the members. I don't think any iteration or the Representative Magnus Amendment is not necessary. And the center gets public state money. And if you actually care about the topic area, you will investigate on your own time as to how they spent the money and how they allocated it to and how that the person who got the money did. This is no offense, Mr. Bull, but this is a good idea to get other people involved who will be able to spend significant time identifying target communities with favorable wind resources, community interest, and local political support on 44.789. That, to me, says that we're going to let somebody else get involved and help people get their projects across the finish line and actually done. And no offense to the department, but I don't think they're best suited to do that. And I think the center is a respected place, and I think I trust that they will pick somebody or other groups to get this money. And since the center gets state money, we'll be able to see it. It will be transparent, and I think Representative Knuth has worked hard on this, and I don't believe it needs to be amended at all.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Peterson, I took your father's spot on the center's board, and they did write some studies on wind energy, but they didn't personally write them, do the research. They had other people do it, and they hired it done. And they have a staff of four people, and I think one just resigned. So I don't know where their expertise in doing this is, although I also have a lot of confidence in their ability to do things because they've demonstrated that very much. But I just wanted you to be aware of the simple fact that they have probably not done this very often. Garfield Ekberg is up here. He's on their board right now. He's in the audience. I'm not aware of the fact that they've ever done this before. Are you, Garfield? He hasn't either. He shakes no. But I do believe they have the ability to do it, so I...
Then let them do it.
Mr. Ball?
And Mr. Chair, Jack Geller is the director of the center. And the reason I suggested them is that I think they do have some expertise on the rural development side of this, which is part of the initiative that Representative Knuth is proposing. And I would expect, ultimately, that we would work in consultation with my conversations with Mr. Geller. That I don't think I think one of the things that we would bring that we will, regardless of how this works, that we will provide some technical assistance to the center how they will be developing the RFP and reviewing the grant application. So either way, I think we're going to be working closely with the center on developing this.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none. All those in favor of the A15 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Magnus, back to the A4.
A4.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since A15 went down, I don't know if we're even going to put any loan provision recoveries in here. We're just spending millions with no reports. Don't have a clue who's what's going on with the administration of this stuff. And I don't know. We don't know where to turn here, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Magnus, I thought you had a little higher opinion at the Center for...
No, I do, and I said that right away when I discussed it. But, Mr. Chairman, I will say I'm concerned about reports back to the legislature. I very seldom will see in here where we send $2 million out the door without any report on it, and that's something we'll have to visit about later on, I guess. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll offer my amendment back up, the A4 amendment then. I guess as it is, as we've talked about it earlier.
Further discussion to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the A4 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next on the agenda, the A13 amendment. Representative Western, I believe that's your amendment.
What's that?
Yeah, I don't know.
The A13, H1392A13.
I believe it is. Mr. Eloff, is that one of those?
That's a Irie Rail Development.
We replaced.
Oh, Mr. Chair, yeah, that's the one that I believe I worked out.
Oh, is
Mr. Ela?
Yes,
yes. Mr. Chair, I'll move the A13 amendment. This is had the 20% to rural locations. University had some concerns with it since we've worked it out. I believe. They told me earlier they didn't need to testify, but if people have questions, they can. They were concerned that if there's some projects that aren't ready to go, they don't want dollars sitting, and I said that's not any intent, but having more research done in rural locations is certainly a laudable goal, and so what we worked out is that in the event there's projects that aren't ready to go, for various reasons, the money would revert back within a year, so there's not any long-term money sitting not being used towards renewable energy research.
And Representative Westerman, Mr. Iverson did discuss this with me, and my understanding is that there is no objection to the amendment as it's currently written, but right. We should ask if there's anyone that wishes to testify for or against the amendment. You know, one, is there discussion to the amendment? Members? Seeing none, Representative renews his motion that H1392A13 be adopted. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next. Another of your amendments, Representative Westrum, and this was drafted to the to House File 2305, so first we would ask you to incorporate in line one removing 2305 and inserting 1392.
Mr. Chair, I would do that. Which amendment?
It's the H2305A1 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is some similar provisions to some amendments that we've looked at earlier this year in this committee. Another provision in this A1 amendment, Mr. Chair. I would move the A1 amendment, first of all. And there's three primary components to this. One, a provision that deals with the school windmill funding option with some of the petroleum reserve funds that last year in the energy bill, Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson and others would remember we had worked out some language to try to expand some of the use of that fund, which currently is targeted towards energy efficiency for schools and hospitals. Those funds haven't been used lately, and the department last year had recommended doing something with them or moving, essentially erasing them off the books. We had developed language to allow some of that money to be used, possibly also for school districts if they would want to purchase a wind turbine. This language would allow a school district to apply for a grant up to $500,000. Last I recall, there was $4 million plus in that account. But we would restrict the applications to one per county if there's other applications. So we try to spread it to some different areas. So Representative Peterson doesn't get five in his county school, and Representative Knuth gets none. That's one provision in this bill, similar to what was in the energy bill last year that didn't pass. The second part is another provision that was in the energy bill last year dealing with the provision of the RDF funds that $1.5 million was carved out in 2003 or established in law that would be targeted if requests came in to help with an incentive payment of $0.015 per kilowatt for methane digesters. Last I knew, and last year was the same case, there hadn't been any applications or projects that had moved with this. And visiting with engineers, they said that there's another way to incent more methane digester capturing from landfills, animal lagoons, et cetera, and so this would give another option that if they create methane gas to displace natural gas and make it available for electricity production. So, for instance, Xcel Energy or Otter Tail Power could buy the gas, the methane gas. The incentive payment would be converted on a BTU basis to equal the same as $0.015 per kilowatt. And that way, the peaking plants that use natural gas that are already in place could buy this gas and make electricity more efficiently than putting that electrical generator on the farm or in the landfill. And so it would modify that provision of the RDF. Third provision then deals with the nuisance liability issue that as we advanced with more wind turbine projects that we just set in law that these projects can't be sued and delayed under the nuisance action in the state of Minnesota. Representative Hackparth had this amendment, if you recall. On the Representative Peterson's RES bill, and those would be the three provisions in this amendment.
Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrum, were there any candidates for doing landfill gas recovery that you were familiar with under this provision?
Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gardner, not to my recollection. I remember Representative Powell used to have some discussions about some prospects down in the southern suburbs or southern south of the metro. I know there's been some landfill or gas recovery projects that have been that have happened or have been talked about, but I'm not aware of any specifically offhand.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Members, this has not been something that has been discussed greatly in this committee, but it was subject to a great deal of discussion in the last session, and there may have been some more controversial elements in the bill as it was originally drafted, but Representative Westrum has eliminated those from this amendment, and I would suggest that we adopt the amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the H2305A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Westrum, one more.
Mr. Chair,
I would be the A3 amendment, the biodiesel pump.
Biodiesel. Mr. Chair, I would move the A3 amendment. This one, as we have discussed, helping advance more E85 pump installation in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota has also been a leader in developing biodiesel as a industry and advancing that technology. We have a B2 blend in our pumps right now, just like we have 10% ethanol in all the gasoline that's distributed in the state. This fund in the bill, the governor proposed $12 million for the bill, has $2 million a year for 4 years. There was some discussion early on that how many more E85 pumps and how fast can we put them in. This amendment simply would say permissively up to 25% of those funds, which would be $250,000 or $500,000 a year at the most, could be used for stations or associations or groups that want to partner with others to put in a biodiesel pump for consumers of a biodiesel blend of 10% or greater. Right now, up to 20% is permitted. And so, Mr. Chair, as we try to expand renewable energy distribution, and we are allocating money for that, this would help expand some of the biodiesel penetration in the market as well. Members, there should be a letter in your packets from the soybean growers expressing their interest and support of this. And again, Mr. Chair, if there's not enough demand, certainly it may go all to E85, but this would be permissive for biodiesel pumps as we try to help bring more of them to the marketplace.
Discussion to this amendment? Yeah, it's been pointed out to me, Representative Westrum, that as with the other amendment, it was drafted to 2305, so we would ask you to incorporate in your amendment on line 1.1, striking 2305 and inserting 1392.
I would incorporate that in my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Westrum, it seems to me there's something of a difference here between biodiesel in ethanol in this regard. As far as I'm aware, there isn't anything right now that would cause anyone that has diesel pumps in their retail facility to sell biodiesel in them. Are you suggesting that what people would want to do is have two different diesel pumps, one of which was a pure petroleum diesel and the other would be a B10 or B20 pump?
Mr. Chair, that would be the intent, just like the E85 pump is available for people that want a higher blend of ethanol in their gasoline, because currently if they pull up to the pump, they're getting 10% ethanol in all the gas they buy, just like now they would be getting 2% in the diesel pumps, but there would be another pump that would have a B10 or a B20 blend in it, that those consumers interested could at least have that marketplace option, which in a few instances does exist, Mr. Chair, right now that I know of, but very few. And with people in my district that have some over-the-road fleets actually interested in burning biodiesel, have a hard time finding any place they can buy extra biodiesel. I know I've anecdotally talked to even car drivers that have diesel engines, and they aren't able to find this very easy, just much like the ethanol dilemma we've had. It's only been the last 4 or 5 years that we've really had a lot more pumps put in, that you can find one every 20, 30 miles. But that's the same notion, Mr. Chair.
Let me ask before I forget, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this amendment? Representative Westerman, I don't see anybody wanting to testify at the moment, but it's my understanding that there are objections to this amendment as it stands. I'm certainly sympathetic to your intent here, but I think that this may be something that needs to have some further consideration before we would want to put this into law. Have you talked to retailers about this proposal, Representative Westman?
Mr. Chair, I've talked to some retailers in my district about this, but nobody recently, and I've had nobody other than the soybean growers talk to me in my office about support or concerns with this language, which has been in the committee possession for since Monday and even before that, and so I haven't heard from anybody with concerns. Mr. Chair, what I would pledge to you is we pass this amendment, and if there is problems that are unforeseen, I'd absolutely be willing to work with the parties that have concerns. But again, this is permissive language. There may not even be requests, and if that's the case, there's not even going to be biodiesel pumps. But it really would be similar to the ethanol E85 pumps that we're trying to promote. So, but I'd certainly make that pledge to you, Mr. Chair, that if there's concerns, we fix the language as we move forward, if we put it in today, and make that just an option with the money we're putting into expanding renewable retail locations.
Well, Representative Westerman, we do have someone now that wants to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I do work with the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, and Representative Westrom had contacted us about this idea and did bring it before our board just yesterday, as a matter of fact. So I apologize for not having more contact with the committee prior to this, but it was something that was agreed to. In any case, B20 is a federally recognized fuel. It helps to meet emission standards in many cases. And as many of you know that were around here when the B2 legislation went through, it does have some environmental advantages when you get to higher blends. At B2, it has little change, but at B20, it has some significant environmental advantages. There have been across the state a number of places where cities in particular have used B20 blends, for instance, in some of their bus transportation, or B5 blends, for instance, in the case of Hennepin County, they've been using B5, I think, for a number of years. When you look at this concept, I'd talked to people in the retail business as well, and have very recently spoken with them about the potential to look at other things than just the B10 to B20 pump that's stated here specifically, and the idea of using blending pumps to get additional variations of those blends up between B10 and B20 that we would think that we could work on with the retailers, and I think they've indicated that they'd like to do that. if this moves forward with an idea that would work towards the conference committee to come up with a little even more refined language to help them achieve what they'd like to achieve and what we'd like to achieve at the same time. I understand that this has come late in the committee, and I understand your concerns about that, but I can tell you that it is being used in the summertime, particularly in many of our farm areas. Co-ops are selling blends as high as 50% to 70% to farmers in particular that have used it. I think Representative Magnus, for instance, might be able to back me up in those statements that that has been happening across the state. And so there is the idea of blending pumps. It'd be a little different than your normal pump that you'd be selling, but it would be something we'd support.
Mr. Schoenfeld, is there a price differential currently? What is the price differential between
Mr. Chairman, the
diesel
price,
and B20?
Mr. Chairman, the price of biodiesel varies, as does the price of diesel fuel. And I might also point out that there is no state funds that go into support of biodiesel, but there is a federal tax advantage that does take place that does help bring down the price of biodiesel. And the reason I mentioned to you that farmers, for instance, would add 50% to 70% in some cases is because it is actually in those cases, at least a year ago, was 50 to 70 cents cheaper than regular diesel fuel when they made those higher blends. It's kind of strange, but as you add more biodiesel because of the tax subsidy on the federal level, the price of the diesel fuel actually becomes cheaper because there's a 1 cent. For every percent that you add, you get 1 cent additional tax advantage on the federal level. So it actually, as you add a higher blend, you actually reduce the price. And in many cases, we have found that biodiesel with high percentage of blends, like 50 or 70%, were actually as much as 50 cents to a dollar cheaper. I don't want to be the final say in that. I think there are other people around here that sell the fuels. But that's what in our discussions that it has been the case in the past. But it does vary. The market varies both for biodiesel and diesel fuel. When diesel fuel is expensive, biodiesel becomes a competitive advantage.
Further discussion? Any questions for Mr. Schoenfeld? Representative Westrum, I think one of the concerns here is that currently, the proposal in the bill is for $4 million out of the 12 proposed by the governor for E85, which, is, of course, is cutting that down appreciably, part of the question being how rapidly that could be dispersed. What you're actually proposing here is $1 million for biodiesel, and I was wondering if you would find it acceptable to cut that percentage down to, say, 10%.
Mr. Chair, you must have read my mind because I was just sitting here thinking, you know, if there's some concern, maybe we should cut the percentage down and we could see that would be enough in a couple of years, or you, really our committee, could look back and say there was some interest in this or not, and I'd see that as a friendly amendment, Mr. Chair.
If you would accept that, the amendment that Representative Westrum wanted to incorporate that into your amendment, I think considering your commitment to consider other input on this proposal as the bill moves forward and it has a number of stops to make, obviously, yet at least the Finance Committee, Ways and Means, and the Tax Committee, I believe, there would be opportunities to change that. So if you wanted to make that incorporation, I think that that would be a reasonable compromise.
Mr. Chair, I would if you need to read it to the record, or else I just would accept changing 25% to 10% in the bill. Mr. Eloff, maybe you can give us the technical location.
Mr. Eloff.
On the on line 1.3, delete 25 and insert 10.
So moved, Mr. Chair, and incorporated in my amendment.
Further discussion to the amendment? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to suggest if this does make some other stops and does get accepted that the Commerce Department is probably not going to look at retailers for the pumps, but bulk users of fuel. I know that the examples mentioned and ones I'm familiar with in the solid waste field have bulk tanks, and so we may be trying to solicit or get bulk users with large fleets to start installing your own tanks where they pump their own stuff. I don't think we're going to be looking at B20s necessarily at Super America, but I wish you luck, Representative Westrom. I hope it works.
Well, that's a good point, Representative Gardner, and that's why we are accepting this with a somewhat tentative agreement. Further discussion to the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, the H2305A3 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Next, members, we have the H1392A14 amendment. I will move that amendment. Members, we did include in the bill a provision providing $4 million to the St. Paul Port Authority for a grant study and development of the Rock 10 renewable energy facility. And I pointed out to the proponents at the time that we would need some language that actually spelled out in greater detail than the language that's currently in the bill about what would be required. And I need to make a verbal amendment to that amendment, which would be on line 1.8 after procurement. Insert from a renewable energy source as defined in section 216B.243 subdivision 3A, which is a statutory definition of renewable fuel. What the amendment then does is just specify that before the funds can be expended, the Commissioner of Commerce has to review the project plan, and the project plan has to include the elements listed, the total project cost estimates for project design and engineering tasks, preliminary plan for fuel source procurement, which includes now the verbal amendment, and also a preliminary financing plan for the entire project. So we just wanted to tighten up the language in the bill, and that's what this amendment does. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Anyone wish to testify? Representative Hackworth?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you repeat just the amendment?
The verbal amendment?
After procurement.
After procurement, insert from a renewable energy source as defined in section 216B.243 subdivision 3A.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good amendment.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, H1392A11, which I believe was Representative Hoppe's amendment. Representative Hoppe doesn't appear to be here. Anyone wish to offer the A11 amendment? Seeing no takers, we will move to the A12 amendment. H1392A12 amendment. Members, I will move that amendment. What this does is clarify the uses of the lead testing and cleanup funds that are part of the current bill. Rather like the last amendment, that is intended just to tighten up the language and clarify where the money goes. This was part of Representative Clark's bill that was the subject of the appropriation. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any other organizations out there that are doing this good work? I mean, we had some discussion about the lead being the other day, and that was a good discussion that kind of enlightened some of us that aren't in the middle of this all the time. But the federally designated nonprofit organization operating the ClearCore program, I have a hunch ClearCore is a program that the feds put together, but nonprofits around the country must execute it.
We do have someone that could testify to that, Representative.
Thanks.
Beard.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Walrath.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Sam Walseth, and I represent the Sustainable Resources Center. That is the federally designated ClearCore site here in Minnesota. And in each state around the country, there is a designated site. Minnesota, the SRC was one of the original pilot sites back in the mid-1990s. The Sustainable Resources Center is able to draw down a dollar-for-dollar federal match from AmeriCorps with any state dollars they receive. There are, I don't know that there are any other nonprofit groups around the state who are doing this type of work, but there are private contractors, home builders, modelers, et cetera, who, if they do become lead certified, can qualify to do this type of cleanup work. But the Sustainable Resources Center and the Clear, which runs the ClearCore program, has been the recipient of these funds in the past, and I think the appropriation is split so that the SRC would be a recipient for some of the funds, and then local governments who are conducting risk assessments would receive the other half of the appropriation.
Representative Beard.
Thank you for enlightening and making me aware of that.
Representative Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, to the witness, and are you saying then in your testimony that if we put in $500,000, that the federals are going to match that? Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, well, that's correct. Dollar for dollar. So basically you'll be doubling your money with that appropriation.
Well, let's see that then.
Mr. Chairman,
Magnus,
you're willing to put that into your amendment as a condition of the amendment, or are we just assuming that'll happen, or how does it? Normally, we'll put that in amendments, I think, or put that in the language that it matched funds, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, in order for the Sustainable Resources Center to actually draw down the federal dollars, they have to have an identified non-federal match, and those are the state grant funds that have been in place. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg. Which one do you require? The requirement from the feds is that there is a non-federal match to draw down the dollars. I don't know if it would hamper the ability of the organization if there was something in statute that required that a match is required to receive those funds.
Well, Representative, again, Mr. Chairman, maybe we need a report back after the first year to see if in fact that is happening. I don't know how we're going to go forward with it. Mr. Chairman, we're appropriating In the bill, we're appropriating $1 million a year for 2 years to the Commissioner of Health, and then specifying under that with your amendment, as I understand it, $500,000, $500,000 each year goes to the ClearCore program. Is the Department of Health going to report back to us then on this after the first year? Or how do we know we're matching the funds and doing this? Because I like the idea of the federal match, Mr. Chairman. I think that's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, SRC has a quarterly report they submit to the Department of Health, a progress report, and so that would continue under this. I think the Department of Health also issues, it's either, I have to double check, either an annual or biannual report about its goals to eliminate childhood lead poisoning by the year 2010. And so that does come to the legislature, I think, every 2 years. It might be every year. I'd have to double check. So there are reporting requirements built into the program right now.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I recall, doesn't the city of Minneapolis come out with a report of all the remediation they do every year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, I'm getting a nod from the expert here that the city does an annual report.
I recall reading that. I think it's very accountable money.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still a little confused on this. We're gonna split up the money. The Department of Health gets half of it for doing the same thing that now we're going to give this nonprofit for doing the same thing. I'm a little concerned and confused by that. Is this part of the bill that came from Commerce, or do we carry Representative Clark's spending money in this committee too? I'm not sure how this got here. And Mr. Chair, if I could also, in the same question, I'll go with that for now.
Representative Hackbarth, this was passed in Representative Clark's committee, and the relationship to this one was that the funding that was proposed initially was from the Petroleum Tank Fund, which she thought was an appropriate funding source because it really was back in the day when this profusion of lead was occurring, was to a large degree the responsibility of leaded gasoline. But we can't fund this program from that source. I did agree because it's a worthy cause and because the effect is to catch a lot of instances of severe lead poisoning while they're still in children capable of being dealt with, at least to some degree.
I think I understand that, Mr. Chairman, and that's okay, and I'm okay with that, and I'm okay with spending the money. I think I'm a little concerned about giving it to this nonprofit group rather than the Department of Health, because both are going to be doing the same thing the way this is worded. Mr. Chairman, in Representative Clark's original bill, was it stated that this is where it was supposed to go, or was it stated the way it is in the bill now?
Representative Hackbarth, according to Representative, this is language from Representative Clark, that my understanding was in the original bill.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Walson, can you shed any light on that for us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, the request that the Sustainable Resources put in this year to the legislature was for $500,000 per year. We were delightfully surprised to see that your committee had an additional $1 million to work with as well. And there's some policy changes going on in Representative Clark's bill, requirements that what are called assessing agencies, so primarily local governments, to require that mandated action, meaning a risk assessment that is done on a property, is triggered sooner than under current law. Right now, if a child is diagnosed with an elevated blood lead level of 15 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood, an assessing agency has to go in and do an environmental risk assessment on that property. We're asking her committee to consider policy to lower that trigger level down to 10 micrograms a deciliter of lead per blood in accordance with what the CDC is recommending around the country. And so as that trigger level is lowered, that will increase the caseload for risk assessments that need to be done. And so with the available funds, that would the additional $1 million that's being carried in this bill, that would allow those assessing agencies to be able to conduct that work.
Further questions, further discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the A12 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Yes, members, the chair would move the H1392A19 amendment. This is an amendment that Mr. Pender pointed out was simply an omission from the language from House File 1748. Has this been distributed?
I'm sorry.
It hasn't been distributed. I'll explain the amendment anyway. Or maybe we should have Mr. Pender address it.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll kind of talk while it's being handed out, I guess. These are two authors' amendments Representative Atkins made in the Commerce Committee. They were not controversial. One of them reduces the continuing education requirements in the bill for mortgage lender employees from 16 hours to 15 hours. And that's just a one-time thing. It's just before you start working, you have to have that amount of education. It's not continuing education. It's pre-licensed education. And then also there was language added to just clarify that the people that have to take this education are human beings and not the mortgage company. So that was viewed as technical. And also, Mr. Chair, I see there's a typographical error here in line 1.4. That first word residence should be residential.
So it would read individual shall engage in residential mortgage origination.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'll incorporate that change in the amendment. Does everyone have a copy of the amendment? No. Is there any discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the H1392A19 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. We have one more amendment, members, and if we could do that, I think we probably cannot get the bill out before we have to get out of here because we have not yet had any discussion of the bill. But this is Representative Westrom's amendment.
Mr. Chair, if you'd want to offer it, I'm open to that as well, but I'd certainly defer to whichever you prefer. I know it's got a little explaining to do. Not a lot, but just briefly. And I can certainly do that.
Representative Westrom, if you want to explain it, I'm proposing a different source for the funds, but go ahead and address your amendment, Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, would you want me to incorporate your amendment in first, or I'll just talk to it as if it was?
We could do that. Representative Westrom, my amendment to your amendment would be on line 1.3.
Okay.
Delete after page, delete the number 4, insert 5 after the word line, delete 28 and insert 3. After delete, delete $10 million and insert $3,250,000. And after the word insert, delete $9,850,000 and insert $1,100,000. I mean $3,100,000, sorry.
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that amendment into my amendment and move. What is the number on this amendment?
This is the H1392A18 amendment.
And move the A18 amendment as amended.
And to your amendment, Representative.
Mr. Chair, to this amendment, first of all, the money, the amendment orally was just to change which line item the money would come out of. And members, I've talked to the chair about this, and amendment deals with a interesting project that I've gotten involved with the last couple of months, and as I've met with different stakeholders, ranging from some Minnesota inventors to the United Auto Workers on saving the Ford plant and finding ways to bring new technologies into that, to brought me down this journey that Representative Rukavina participated with me this morning with the United Auto Workers and DEED and the Department of Commerce, and it's progressed late but excitingly to a point where United Auto Workers and others, along with the Department of Commerce, are interested in finding new options for the Ford plant, and also we have a plug-in task, hybrid task force that is a result of legislation from the past. And so the reason for all this information is just to give you some very, very brief background on a project that is coming about, and with the Minnesota companies, with Minnesota Inventions, that at least has some potential of an electric car prototype. And the idea the United Auto Workers is working with is getting a Ford Ranger that is made at the St. Paul plant, and without the engine, without the transmission, just the basic Ford Ranger, and doing a prototype with the electric car with the transmission technology that has been invented here in Minnesota, that has got exciting promise, as well as some battery rechargeable capabilities from 3M that I understand is at least potentially interested, and that is the need for this money, largely, Mr. Chair, to pull this prototype and all the pieces together, and the $150,000 up to or permissive for the Department of Commerce would be to help make this test and prototype a reality, and potentially visionary thinking of maybe a Ford plant or other Minnesota businesses being able to go down the road of a electric car. And just to give you some flavor, dessert first, the idea of at least 250 miles on a charge out of the battery is some of the capabilities we're talking here. 140-mile-an-hour electric car potential, a speed of up
that was zero. Illegal, Representative.
That's on a drag strip in Brainerd, Mr. Chair.
All right.
From 0 to 60 in 4 seconds is the type of option that we might be looking at. And so, Mr. Chair, very shortly, that is what this deals with. United Auto Workers is supportive of this. Representative Rukavina is. Mr. Chair, I understand that we're going to talk to you. They didn't. You're taking me on my word of this, and word is the best thing you have around here. So that is our discussion was to at least try to find a place to carry this and progress the discussions over the next weeks, just to ensure that there's this prospect could be an option by the time we pass the bill or have conference committee. So with that, I'll stand for questions, or that's what this amendment is about.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I think it's a good idea, an interesting proposal, and a little money is better than none. Just a quick question for Mr. Eliff. The term at the end of line 10, developed in Minnesota, qualifying the batteries, converters, and other components, Just wondering if the qualifier, if feasible, leaves enough language that if we had components that worked well, that were not developed in Minnesota, that they could be, that we wouldn't be disqualifying the use of those elements. I think I'm correct, but I was hoping you could assuage my fear.
Mr. Eales?
I agree with you. I think it does provide okay. that measure of assurance.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the H1392A18 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Members, we have no further amendments, but we are also out of time. I think we have.
We probably have enough time to move the bill, Mr. Chairman.
There, I believe, are people that wanted to testify on the bill. If they have changed their mind.
If they're in opposition, I think that may be helpful. If they're not, I think we're ready to move.
Do we have anyone that wishes to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chair,
as Representative Westrum,
as you're seeing, if that's the case, what is the option if we continue? We come back tonight to
if
pass
continue,
this.
Continue, Representative Westrum. I would propose to go on to recess and reconvene at 6 o'clock.
And if we pass it, then we just.
Then
come back tomorrow and do
come back tomorrow and take up House File 436. The will of the committee to stick it out. I was concerned about the Republican caucus schedule for this room, but the pages tell me no one is there.
We're not caucus.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, we'll skip our caucus if you'll skip your caucus.
Mr. Forsler, how much time do you need?
Mr. Chairman, sensing how badly everyone would like to come back here at 6 o'clock, I think I can do this real quickly. Mr. Chairman, my name is Rich Forsler. I'm a lobbyist for the Investment Company Institute, which is the trade association for the mutual fund industry. Just wanted to comment on the fee proposal that's included in the bill, which would raise the fees on mutual fund filings in the state of Minnesota. Just by way of background, mutual funds are a very popular investment vehicle. Over 1 million mutual fund accounts are held by Minnesotans. And citizens of the state and citizens of the country use mutual funds as an investment vehicle for their retirement funds, for college education funds for their children. Those shares of mutual funds are required to be registered in Minnesota before they're sold with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and a filing fee is paid with regard to the registration of those shares. Members, this is a program that costs the department about $1.1 million per biennium to administer. The fees that they collect in the biennium are estimated to be about $64 million. The amount that they can retain is capped under the law at $50 million for the biennium. The proposal in the bill would remove the $50 million cap and allow the Department of Commerce to retain the entire $64 million that is collected on this program. I wanted to make it clear to the members that these fees are a direct pass-through to the investors in the funds. Mutual fund is, in essence, like a large investment club. People pool their money together, and then they hire a professional manager to make investment decisions with regard to the funds that are pooled. The return that's earned on the funds is ultimately the return for the investors, but prior to getting the return, all the expenses of managing the fund are deducted. Those expenses would include paying the folks who are hired to manage the fund, paying for any legal or accounting costs that are associated with managing the fund, and most importantly for this bill, paying the registration fees that are associated with it. So I just want the committee to know that the provision in here takes off the cap, increases the amount of fees that would be retained by the department by $14 million over the biennium, and actually reduces the return to investors who participate in funds and who purchase shares here in Minnesota. So as an industry, we are opposed to that increase. It also has a dramatic impact on Minnesota companies that are involved in the mutual fund business, because the ones that are based here in Minnesota have a tendency to sell more shares to Minnesotans than ones who are based elsewhere. So the fee falls particularly hard on the investors who are here in Minnesota, and a lot of them are folks who buy from Minnesota-based funds. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that members have.
Questions for Mr. Forsman?
Thank you for your time. Hope I didn't take too much.
I think we have one more witness who hopefully we can squeeze in. And
Mr. Chairman,
to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Jim Alders. I am manager of regulatory projects at XL Energy. I'm here to speak in opposition to, I believe it's Article 4, Section 5, the provision of the bill that would extend for another year a stay of the Public Utilities action to grant a certificate of need for the Monticello nuclear power plant so that we can continue to operate that plant for an extended period of time to 2030. The existing law that was established in 2003 established a stay of the public utility action in a certificate of need proceeding. This last fall, the Public Utility Commission granted a certificate of need for the continued operation of this Monticello nuclear power plant and gave permission to store the spent nuclear fuel that would be created during that extended period of operation. The purpose of the stay period was to provide you, the legislature, the opportunity to look at what the commission did and take action if you felt warranted. I'm here to let you know that there are consequences associated with extending that period of time. If indeed we can't start construction of a spent fuel storage facility this year, we would have to take other steps to provide for spent fuel within the power plant at Monticello. Those costs are in the range of $2 to $3 million. If the delay occurs, we also are not in a position to make other investments at the power plant that currently are being planned. We are poised to go back to the commission to ask permission to make hundreds of millions of dollars of additional investments in the power plant over time so that the facility can continue to operate efficiently and safely, so that we can increase the amount of power generated at the plant during that period of time. If there's uncertainty and continuing uncertainty about what the state's policy really is with regard to nuclear power, we feel compelled to delay some of those decisions about investment. Since those investments are hundreds of millions of dollars, and at minimum all of those investments would be delayed at least 2 years because of the refueling cycles and maintenance cycles at the power plants, there's additional millions of dollars that in additional cost that would result simply because of inflation in materials and project costs. Flip side of the coin, Mr. Chairman and members, is the Public Utility Commission spent 2 years working at gathering the facts, examining the public policy and interest. They found indeed that there is significant benefit to our customers with continued operation of the power plant, economically and environmentally. The calculus no longer is nuclear power versus other resource choices. The calculus is, in order to advance the most economical and the power supply system with the least environmental impact, we need a combination of sources like nuclear power that are emission-free and the aggressive approach to renewables that both the House and the Senate passed this year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Ellers, as you're aware, and members, this provision in the bill is intended, let me start over. There have been objections raised by a number of interests and members of the public that the legislature had not had any discussion of this issue, of any review of the PUC decision. That was the intention of this provision in the bill, to make it possible for the legislature to have the opportunity to discuss this issue. I had thought earlier today that we had reached an agreement with some language that would make that possible without this kind of uncertainty. We had some tentative agreement about that, that as one of the representatives from Excel pointed out, they made the mistake of showing it to their attorneys. And we found some language that it just wasn't possible to incorporate in time to deal with this. But it is certainly my intention to continue working on that language with Excel to make it possible to have this discussion quite possibly within the context of the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, which can meet at any time, without creating this kind of uncertainty for Excel. We certainly appreciate your position in that, Mr. Alders, and that's not my intention. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think at this time we will have to, unfortunately, continue working on this to get some agreement, but I want to again reiterate that it's my intention to do so. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Alders? Seeing none, any further discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, the chair will renew his motion that House File 1392, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed.
Yeah. No fire.
So I didn't have time to thank
the bigger
staff
than I had for
to make sure that we do that before we finish all of this.
After they're all my
bill. Yeah, that's why we watch them.
No, if we don't have talk,
Paul,
I just see